sometimes. Spiritual disciplines help us to open the door to allow God to work on us from the inside. No matter how hard we try or how sincere we are, we're unable to bring about deep, lasting spiritual changes by our own efforts. We may succeed for a while, only to fall at hurdles, especially when those hurdles become too high, too often, and too difficult. We so much want to be people who faithfully and wholeheartedly give, pray, and fast because we know of the spiritual benefits we will receive, because these actions benefit others, they help demonstrate God's kingdom, and because we want to be obedient. We long to be the giving, praying, and fasting people God is asking us to be, for all the right reasons, not to seek others' approval or congratulations or to feel good about ourselves, but simply out of our love for God and our desire to be obedient. However, if we're to continue transforming into the people that God knows we can be, we require divine assistance. And it is by adopting good disciplines that we can tap into the wealth of help, guidance, strength, encouragement, and wisdom that God gives. Spiritual disciplines, when they have become an intrinsic part of our daily lives, allow God to work from the inside. Thus, our relationship with God deepens and grows, and the more time we spend with Him, the more we hear from Him. The more we hear from Him, the easier it is to operate within His will, responding to His promptings, understand His wisdom, and learn how to serve. And in this way, we can better store up treasure in heaven, not earthly treasure, but something infinitely better. The text for today is Matthew 6, 19 to 24. And would David perhaps read that for us?
Do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye of the lamp is the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money.
Thanks, Sarah. Today's passage within the Sermon on the Mount is subtitled Treasures in Heaven. And Jesus begins by advising us not to accumulate treasures here on earth, but instead to store up treasures in heaven. Our earthly treasures are not secure. They can be stolen or damaged and are earthbound. We cannot take them with us. But treasures that we store in heaven are safe. They cannot get damaged or stolen and are everlasting. I guess it's easy enough for us to identify the types of earthly treasures Jesus is speaking about. If they're prone to rust or moth damage, they must be possessions. And if they are likely to be stolen by thieves, then they must have financial value. I don't believe that Jesus is in any way suggesting that there is something wrong in having possessions or a degree of financial wealth. We'll all have our own earthly possessions and treasures, valuable or otherwise. So what does Jesus mean when he says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven? What are these treasures? 1 Corinthians 15:58 says, always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Colossians 3:23-24 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. In 2 Timothy 4 and 8 it says, Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. And Revelation 22:12 says, Behold, I am coming soon. My reward is with me, and I will give to everyone according to what he has done. Serving others, serving sacrificially or in small ways, remember that even seemingly small acts of service are noticed by God, for instance, giving someone a glass of water. Heavenly rewards await those who serve the Lord faithfully. A great reward is promised to those who are persecuted for Jesus' sake. And the heavenly treasures that await us are worth significantly more than any difficulties and challenges we may face while we seek to serve him here on earth. For me, the sentence that sticks out is, For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So if our heart is with God, our treasure is there. If our heart is with our possessions, our treasure is in them. Matthew 19:16-22 tells the story of the religious rich young man who approached Jesus to ask what he must do to gain eternal life. Having established that the young man already obeyed all the laws and commandments, Jesus tells him, If you want to be perfect, go, sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. But the young man could not bring himself to do this. His wealth and possessions were actually not the problem. The problem was that he valued them, this world's treasure, more than he valued God. This is one of my treasures. Can you see it? It's tiny. If anybody wants to see it afterwards, just come and ask. I'll let you see it. I bought it in an antique coin shop in York, and it's believed to be the same coin that is described in the Bible as a mite. In the story, which is in Luke 21:1-4, which I know you will all know well, a poor widow gives all she has as her offering in the temple. Two small coins. Two mites. She gave all that she had. Whilst others gave out of their surplus, she put God first and was so storing up treasure in heaven. My commentary states that materialistic concerns occupy a lot of our attention, but possessions cannot last, so putting them first is imprudent. So, as a new way of being human, giving absolute priority to God and to eternal issues, and treasuring Jesus most of all. When Jesus is our treasure, we will commit ourselves fully, our money, our time, our gifts, to his work in this world. In verses 22 and 23, Jesus speaks about the eye being the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light, but if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Apparently the words which the NIV translates as good and bad have in this case special meaning. Good equals generosity and bad equals stinginess and jealousy. And these two verses are describing two things. Perfect spiritual sight equals a wholehearted devotion to God and putting him first. And a warped spiritual sight, selfish materialism, equals putting wealth and possessions first. In verse 24, Jesus says, No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Along with verses 22 and 23, this verse is attacking a preoccupation with the love of money, or mammon, an Aramaic word used as a general term for material possessions. Jesus saying that we have to decide between God and money because we cannot serve both. It comes down to what we love the most. Today's passage is basically challenging us. Do we love God more than we love the things that this world offers? Do we prioritize the things of God over our earthly timetables? We love God and he loves us, and because of this we know that we do not need to worry about money because we trust God to provide for us. We also know that we are commanded to love God and to love our neighbor. Somehow, even though it's sometimes challenging, we seem to understand how to love others. But loving the Father, how do we do that? Love is a funny old thing, isn't it? Elizabeth Barrett Browning, describing human love, wrote, "How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach." Perhaps no bad way to begin loving God either. Others have described love this way. Love is what makes you smile when you're tired. Terry, age 4. When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that your name is safe in their mouth. Billy, age 4. You really shouldn't say I love you unless you mean it. But if you mean it, you should say it a lot. People forget. Jessica, age 8. Love is what's in the room with you at Christmas if you stop opening presents and listen. Bobby, age 7. Wow. If you want to learn to love better, you should start with a friend who you hate. Nika, age 6. Double wow. Another quote says, "The supreme happiness of life is the conviction that we are loved." George Matheson's hymn includes the lines, "O love that wilt not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thine ocean depths it flow may richer, fuller be." Well, we know what we're loved, and when we believe we're loved, we love back. We know that the Greek word agape describes a self-giving love. Not just a feeling, but something far, far deeper. It describes a decision of the will to be committed to something or someone. It is a love that survives through difficulties, and even at those times when the other person does not appear to love in the same way as we do, this is the kind of love God has for us. So our love for God is a decision to respond to the incomparable and unmatchable love that God has shown us in his Son, Jesus. Jesus, who could give no greater offering of love than laying down his life for each one of us. But we don't only love God out of gratitude. How do we love God the way we should? Bishop Irenaeus, who was born in 130 AD, said, "Without God, God cannot be known." So I know that I need God's help to know him and to love him the way I should, with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength. When we're brand new Christians, we're very aware of this intense sense of love, both from God to us and from us towards God. Sometimes our love goes through peaks and troughs, but I believe that our love for God grows when we are aware of his great faithfulness during the most difficult times in our lives, and as we become more and more aware of his loving care, mercy, and grace. Our love grows as we see answered prayer, receive provision, and feel that overwhelming sense of peace that only God's presence can give. However, it's not possible to love someone we don't know. Leo Buscaglia says, "A loving relationship is one in which the loved one is free to be himself, to laugh with me, but never at me, to cry with me, but never because of me, to love life, to love himself, to love being loved. Such a relationship is based upon freedom and can never grow in a jealous heart." Getting to know God is essential if we want to know how to love him. This is where the disciplines I spoke about earlier come in. We get to know God by spending time with him, studying the word, praying, fasting, sharing with him your joys and sadnesses, concerns and hopes. Ask him questions and listen for the answers. In this busy, busy, frantic, noisy world, fight to keep your time with God guarded and precious. If we do, our love will grow, and as it grows, we will find it easier to show our commitment to him, honour him, obey him, and witness to others of this great, loving God. Eliharan says, loving God strongly is walking away from gossip when you prefer to be part of the group. It's admitting you're wrong and making a change. It's asking people to help you protect your relationship with God when you don't feel like it. It's avoiding the people and things that could take your attention and love away from him. It's getting up and trying again after you've failed. Our God is a loving God, a giving God, a God who nurtures and cares for us, forgiving all our sinful ways, our forgetfulness, and oftentimes our neglect of him. He is always available. He answers our prayers, grants us peace, has gifted us this beautiful world, a sense of humour, chocolate, sunsets, and people who enrich our lives. He has given us unconditional, never-ending love, a sense of belonging, strength for the day, the fellowship of our brothers and sisters, and more awesome than all of these, he gave us Jesus. Who can't love a God like this? So for my part, I shall endeavour to give him priority and seek to have my love for him grow and grow. I hope he knows that my heart is his, that he is my treasure, and where our treasure is, there our hearts will be also. Amen. Hand back to